Chapter 13, To Be. Chapter Warnings. Physical violence, mentions of sexual harassment, mineta, emotional breakdowns, panic attacks, dissociation, bullying, BDSM themes, references to suicide and suicidal ideation, ultimate Dadzawa and Shinsun, character reveal, trans character, unsafe binding, and chest binding. At the end of the day, Aizawa was very, very glad to be on his way home. He hadn't even stayed too long after the last bell, chased out by Toshinori and Hizashi and Namori, who insisted in chorus that he needed more rest. Any protests that he'd put his ancillary training obligations on hold met with deaf ears, and they jointly chased him out of the teacher's lounge with some truly irresponsible use of plastic clipboards and the promise of a perfectly graded bundle of papers on his desk in the morning. Aizawa didn't quite believe that last part, especially the way he heard them giggling like idiots after the door shut, with Mike's whisper rattling the damn wall. But for once, he was willing to let it be. He had to, really. He needed sleep, and badly. Sleep preferably uninterrupted by the tossing, turning, fractured urgency of being pulled by so many diverse responsibilities, yet unable to meet all of them adequately, which may have been why he had given Shinzo the week off. He needed to decompress and regroup after all this, and the idea of spending the afternoon alone in his quiet apartment with his kitten sounded like heaven. Even the fantasy of rest was enough to quicken Aizawa's pace as he moved through the sunny, quiet neighborhood just off campus, staring around at the little residential gardens and shyly blooming trees, dotting the sidewalk as though seeing them for the first time. Of course, he didn't make it as far as his street without encountering unmitigated disaster, because that just wasn't what he signed up for at UA. The first thing he heard in his very quiet neighborhood was scuffing, the sharp particular sound that came with a lot of weight or curt movement against a rough surface, usually concrete and shoes, and that alone made him frown and slow, as it didn't sound like running. Then, a definite slap of skin and a stifled grunt. Then, worst of all, "You call yourself a hero? Talk! Go ahead! Talk!" Aizawa turned on a dime and ran down the street, already holding his breath, because he knew that voice. He had never heard it so raw, like it had been punched out of him, even as he'd spent the last few weeks of his life punching the kid and giving him plenty of reasons to spit and growl. Aizawa stopped at the entrance to an alleyway, freezing at the scene, drenched in sunlight, even in the claustrophobic pillar of space between the two houses. Shinzo was standing close to the far wall, his back turned and his fists clenched, and it took Aizawa a minute to recognize who he had cornered. Always prohibitively short, Mineta looked like a smear on the concrete, with the Gen Studies student towering over him. The smaller boy was cowering, with a hand literally jammed over his mouth, visibly shaking. The hectic puff of his breath was audible in the small space, and it was all he dared to do with the quirk housed in his schoolmate's body. The quirk Shinzo was threatening him with, savagely, when he could just beat him up. From his vantage point, even as Aizawa's gut hitched up in dread and consternation and a dozen other panicked, responsible feelings, it was not impossible to notice how Shinzo's physique had changed. The steadiness of his stance, a broadening of the shoulders and biceps defined under the shirt sleeves of his uniform. The second thing Aizawa noticed was how he chose to use that new strength, which was apparently terrorize his schoolmates. "I heard what you said to those girls. You're not so chatty now, are you? Talk!" It was an order, low and breathless and unhinged, accompanied with a shove. Mineta moaned shrilly under his hand, scuffling up against the wall, and Shinzo leaned in. Why don't you want to talk? Because someone can do to you what you did to them? Make you feel helpless? Make you do something you don't want to? Does that scare you, you little shit? Is there a problem here? Aizawa heard himself say, as if from a distance. Tired and gruff. Jolting in place, his eyes wide over his shoulder, Shinso turned immediately at the sound of his voice, and Mineta, sweaty and white as a sheet, made a break for it. He barely got two steps in before Shinso's foot jabbed out and caught him, sending him sprawling. The very next second, Shinso was on him with a knee between his shoulder blades, pitilessly wrenching Mineta's stick-thin arms up and together behind his back, just like he taught him. Mineta was begging for help. Aizawa could hear him whining, shrieking, "Aizawa-sensei, please, it hurts, he's hurting me!" And his stomach turned sharply, because he already knew the kind of thing that Shinso caught him doing, and far away, under the deep and present necessity of protecting one of his students, the last resolve to give this rat a chance cracked. "No, you don't!" Aizawa could hear his accidental protege muttering, voice thick with effort or rage, and he knew it was time to do more than ask questions. "Shinso, step off," he barked, making his footsteps heard as a kind of warning as he walked forward into the alley. "Now." Shinso froze on the alleyway floor, but did not move, his back heaving with exertion. Mineta's constant, smothered whimpering left no illusions as to exactly how much of his weight Shinso was using to hold him down, and Aizawa tisked behind his teeth. "This isn't how we do things at this school," Aizawa grit out, keeping his burning eyes trained on the boy's hunched back, and not the student he had pinned, in case he was trying to use his quirk. Should Mineta be stupid enough to say something to him at this point, that was. But it wasn't his stupidity Aizawa was so worried about. The seconds ticked by, marked by harsh breath and nothing else. Each one aged him a fucking year. "Shinso Hitoshi." At last, Shinso lifted his arms, mechanical, his palms to the sky. But it was all the space Mineta needed to squirm out and scramble away on his ass, holding his bloody nose. The boy then flipped and scrambled over to him, reaching out for his jumpsuit pant leg before he was even upright and babbling shrilly all the while. "Aizawa sensei, did you see? It's that crazy Gen Studies kid, the one with the villain quirk. He just attacked me. We're not allowed to use our quirks outside of class, and he was gonna... Did you hear him? If you hadn't..." Mid-sentence, Mineta looked up, maybe seeking reassurance or promise of due punishment, but Aizawa made sure there was none. The young man's face dropped and his grip wilted and his voice squeezed off to nothing. He sniffled wetly, and a drop of blood slithered down his forearm and hit the concrete. "I'll deal with you later," Aizawa said coldly, stepping away without another glance and making his way towards Shinso. He heard hurried footsteps as Mineta presumably retreated at high speeds and made a mental note to speak with Nezu as soon as humanly possible. Though he'd held out hope in the beginning, it was obvious Mineta wasn't going to grow into a decent human overnight, and something would have to be done in the meantime. After he dealt with this. Even as he drew even with Shinso, the kid didn't move. He was still on his knees, slumped over and staring at his hands. And the first spark of anger singed Aizawa's determination, now that it was just the two of them. "Get up," he muttered, hauling him to his feet by the back of his dress shirt. Shinso stumbled immediately, and Aizawa pinned him in place with a hand on his shoulder, bearing down on him. Debated backing him against the wall so he could see how it felt. "What was that?" Shinso muttered something. Aizawa fucking hated that he couldn't understand him, that he was sloppy and churlish and stupid and always in trouble. Or maybe Aizawa was looking for a reason to be pissed. Maybe he hated the fact that Shinso had a reason to confront this kid, without a doubt, and the attack was anything but unprovoked. but what they did never cleanly matched with this kind of vigilante justice. The satisfaction of beating people who plainly deserved to be punished for their crimes was not lost on him, but he was a teacher. He had to inform and encourage the best in growing children, and that meant stomping out this kind of hazing mentality. So Aizawa played the role. He had to. He grit his teeth. Do you have anything to say for yourself? Is that how you're using your training? Shinzo pulled away, or tried to. It wasn't much more than a sloppy tug, and Aizawa yanked him back, trying to steady his voice as he leaned in. Mostly, he tried not to get angrier than he already was, or squeeze harder than he had to. He's a shit. I know, and I'm going to deal with him, but you can't just take your anger out on him. It's not heroic, he said stupidly, the painfully simple kind of thing that Toshinori would say. But it was exactly the wrong sentiment. Not heroic? He's the one who's not heroic! Shinzo erupted, voice cracking in rage. His fists shook at his side and his back was heaving again, tousled head bent. The back of his pale neck was slathered in sweat, and Aizawa realized the cloying heat under his hand wasn't just exertion as the kid threw himself out of his grip, staggering away and propping himself up against the wall. He was taking pictures up my classmates' skirts and trying to touch them. They told him to stop, and he just kept going, seeing what he could get away with. What? Because they're Gen Studies kids? Because he's in the hero course and he can get away with it? It doesn't make any fucking sense. Shinzo, Aizawa cut in, trying to be firm and stop the panic ratcheting higher and higher, raising the hairs on his skin in the small residential space. But it only made Shinzo fling his arms out and yell louder, hoarse voice echoing against the houses on either side. He has no respect for them, for anyone. It doesn't matter that they said no. He just took what he wanted. If he had my quirk, he'd be a villain. Shinzo was shaking, his breath tearing in and out of him with his hands clawed in his uniform shirt, tall body bent nearly double from the splitting force of his fury. He shook his head, grabbing into his light hair, and Aizawa could see him trembling as he turned. But my whole life, I tried so fucking hard, having everybody think I wanted to hurt them. Then a bastard like him? Shinzo's voice caught in his throat, his round face painfully red and slick with tears. And Aizawa saw his knees unlock just a second before the kid pitched forward. It was close, but Aizawa caught him, taking a knee to the concrete and getting an arm under his chest and his legs and grunting with the impact. Shinzo went limp as he hit, dangerously limp. But as soon as Aizawa righted him in his arms, clammy arms tangled around his shoulders. Shinzo's long body began to convulse with heart-wrenching sobs, and the boy just dissolved against him, radiating feverish heat and anguish. Why? He choked, far back in his throat, little more than a gasp. Why not me? How can someone like him be a hero and not me? Aizawa instinctively tightened his arms around him, desperately trying to hold him together in some way. Shinzo just curled up piteously small against his chest, his body shaking with grief as he sobbed through his teeth into his teacher's shirt. Why won't anyone let me be what I am? Aizawa couldn't respond. He couldn't think, for the panic splitting his chest, but to do damage control. Hurriedly looking Shinzo over like a crime scene, it was clear that Mineta had managed to pop off and maybe put up a fight before Shinzo physically pinned him. There was a dark globe welded to the alley floor, and the telltale purple residue stained Shinzo's ripped UA button-down. His red tie was gone, as were half the shirt buttons. And in his automatic tallying, looking for wounds or immediate problems, Aizawa tightened down to his spine at what he saw past the torn fabric. He covered it up, yanking the ruined shirt closed. Shit. He hiked the sobbing boy against his chest, close enough to hear what Shinzo was saying between labored, stuttering breaths. I have to live, take care of each other for society. Heroes have a duty. You can't. You're not making any sense, he hissed under his breath, almost to himself. Izawa jolted him again, quickly palmed his sweaty forehead, wincing at how boneless Shinzo sat against his shoulder. His lanky body suddenly jolted with wet, racking coughs, and Izawa realized he was sick, very sick. You're burning up. What the hell, kid? Aren't you supposed to be resting? He wanted to ask, but he was the one that had to be chased out of the office, and Shinzo, like him, had already showed a troubling habit of working off the clock, pushing shit, pushing his luck, and pushing himself. He should have seen this coming, Aizawa thought, and cursed quietly, boxing up the immediate chaos of the scene with the familiar sting of chastising himself. This was why he couldn't get exhausted, couldn't let his guard down even for a minute, because so much depended on his ability to predict how fucking stupid the people around him were. But that didn't matter right now. What mattered was Shinzo, covered in sweat and knocked out cold in his arms. His options were few and sheared further by secrecy, which he detested. Recovery Girl often stayed in her office until sunset, but he also couldn't be seen on campus, carrying a battered, unconscious student who wasn't even under his care. Too many questions and too much potential for panic, with the villain attacks barely in the rearview mirror. It was also a long way to go, and time could be an issue. Aizawa looked over the boy in his arms, tallying signs and symptoms as his years of training took over like a thin layer of ice, encasing his pounding heart. Shinzo still had some color in his face and was breathing, if fitfully. There didn't seem to be any emergency beyond getting him somewhere safe where he couldn't fall and hit his head or assault any more of his classmates in fever state. That he could do. If there was any remaining doubt on the matter as Aizawa turned tail and sprinted up the empty street, it was gone. He really, really fucking had to meet with the boy's parents yesterday. A few frantic minutes later, Aizawa kicked open his apartment door, and Himawari immediately ran to meet him, winding around his legs as he knocked off his shoes and almost sending all of them to the floor. I know, he muttered, batting her away with his bare foot, as she meowed indignantly at him, seeming to realize they had a guest. Bad idea. Only idea. After a moment of vaguely nauseated deliberation, he deposited Shinzo long ways on his couch, corralling a pillow to wedge under his head, and popping off the kid's dirty sneakers and throwing them at the door with a little more force than necessary. Shinzo's fingers twitched at the sound, but his face remained slack, reddened lids fluttering. Considering both the state of his uniform and the fever, Aizawa added a blanket for good measure. He was out cold. Crouching low, Aizawa just looked at him and endured the swell of understanding and fear that came to shove his sore heart into his throat, eating into whatever safe distance lingered between them. Stupid kid. Stupid, angry, hurt kid. Aizawa himself probably would have behaved even worse, considering all the rage under his skin at that age. He probably would have knocked Mineta's teeth out before anyone could have stopped him, dying for an excuse to pantomime justice and make someone bleed. Maybe he should have let Shinzo get it a little further, honestly. He could have taught Mineta a lesson that he, by very sound laws, could not. Sexual abuse would not be tolerated on this campus. They were a bastion of freedom, not impunity. And maybe UA called to Shinzo exactly because of that freedom. Gen studies or no, he was here and he was fighting. Because of who he wanted to be, yes, but also who he was. A concept made infinitely larger by the chest bindings. Aizawa had glimpsed underneath the boy's wrecked uniform while hauling him off the alleyway floor. It had never struck Aizawa so clearly before that moment, the way they did things differently and embraced differences as strengths. Yue was a crucible of transformation and offered a chance to start anew in a multitude of ways for students who had never had the room to be themselves before. For a trans kid like Shinso, the simple option of designating a gender or lack thereof on a student ID card must have seemed like a fucking revolution. A new life, stamped in ink, and the last word as far as the hero world was concerned. But identity was never that simple. The scummy trails of burst blood vessels he'd seen under Shinso's collarbone, the skin pinched and stifled and strangled into scarring at the edges of the grubby bandages encasing his chest, told the rest of the story of trying and being in isolation. His anger hit him like a wave, explosive and sharpened by a stupid, nonsensical sting of betrayal. "You're shit at wrapping your feet," he wanted to shake Shinso and yell. "Have you been binding your chest this entire time, and you didn't think to let me know?" It was obvious he was overdoing it, and the crude cloth bandages cut into his chest rather than give a millimeter. Fucker probably slept in them. Aizawa thought of every time that Shinso couldn't seem to catch his breath, every time he'd clotheslined him across the chest just to get his attention. All the baggy clothes. He wanted to lay the kid flat even as he was practically unconscious. Wanted to take him to task for every little thing that could have gone wrong while physically training someone with a fucking vice around their ribs. Dislocated ribs, diminished lung capacity, irreparable scarring. But he was also conscious enough to recognize the jarring, bottomless sensation of when he was truly panicking. Aizawa hated not knowing things. Especially when he was already out on a limb in so many ways with this entire arrangement. But he couldn't go off on Shinso right now. Not about that. Definitely not about that. When this was already going to be hard. So he sat and breathed. And it echoed in his head. Stifled and sick with feeling. Why won't anybody let me be what I am? Aizawa knew that the bindings were irrelevant in the scheme of things, far less an immediate concern than whatever sickness he'd worked himself into. But deeper still was a parallel of being that split his heart. Maybe he'd always passed as the boy he was, and it was never a problem. But the friction and the threat remained in Shinso's very nature. There were people in their world who would never see him as a man, and people who would never see him as a hero, no matter what he did. They would dictate what he was based on their own small fears and unwillingness to learn, to reach, when all Shinso had ever done was reach to try to tell everyone who and what he was. It seemed the strongest, yet most helpless thing to say aloud, what you were, in a world where public visibility and acceptance were paramount to a successful hero career, and social affirmation was as important as oxygen in this age. Needy and pathetic and powerless. Yet the most important thing in the world to decide and insist on yourself, your meaning, and your identity and your dreams, even as everyone said you were something else. But sick and troublesome and painful as he was, Aizawa knew. Shinso was a young man and a hero in training. That he would defend to the death. Frozen on the floor, Aizawa was jolted out of the dark tide of his thoughts by a quiet, curious meow. With no one watching her for 3 seconds, Himawari had slunk up to the side of the couch and soundlessly alighted on the armrest, inches from Shinso's upturned face, with her whiskers twitching. She was getting better at jumping. She was growing up, even, and it had only been a month or two. "Get off," he growled at her, swatting half-heartedly at her tail. "You brat." She dodged him and touched her little nose to Shinso's wet hair, then slunk down and settled beside him in the crook of the couch, with an unfathomable sense of decisiveness, tucking her red-banded legs underneath her belly and glowering at him, daring him to come get her. After a moment, Aizawa exhaled with difficulty, forced to let her be or risk waking the kid with the excavation. Not worth it. With nothing else to do, his apartment silent as death and warped around the incredible weight of the child on his couch, Aizawa sat against the back of the couch and took out his phone. His fingers were shaking as he pulled up his contact list, and though limited in number, every name was a question and another sprawling set of circumstances and factors. In the end, only one person really understood the full breadth of the disaster on his couch. But could he really call Toshinori? Should he? Aizawa clenched his eyes shut and breathed out slowly. No, he would probably panic and blame himself, and they didn't have time for that, especially considering Shinzo's habit of assuming guilt. He was on his own, for now. As if to impress the truth of that statement, Aizawa heard another sweet, high meow. When he looked over, Shinzo had his eyes open and was staring at his cat, glazed and transfixed. "Her name is Himawari," Aizawa said gruffly, still mostly in his phone for the kid's sake, giving him time.
"I thought this was Yagi-san's cat,"
Shinzo whispered at length, carefully touching her face with just the tips of his fingers. She rubbed gladly into his palm, and he blinked, pressing clumsily at his wet eyes with his free hand.
"He showed me pictures on his phone."
"He visits," Aizawa said before he could stop himself. Maybe it was the simplest explanation. Shinzo looked up at him and then away, taking a deep, shuddering breath, and just lay there, shoeless and helpless. He wasn't even asking where he was. That was a fucking problem as far as instincts went. They would have to talk about that. Aizawa rose to his feet with a low groan, feeling the dive he'd taken earlier and the pinch of his knees. "Are you hungry?" he asked blithely, hating it. "Fevers make some people hungrier than normal. Or have you been eating at all?" Shinzo ducked his head as much as he could, light lashes webbed with drying tears and fluttering as he coughed and tried to swallow it back. He knew he was sick. Aizawa heard him sniffle wetly, and then, of all things, the kid rolled over on the couch and curled up around his cat, hiding his face. Prepared to throw down just a second before, Aizawa felt something just deflate inside of him. He was just a fucking kid. One of his kids by now. But that's why he couldn't just give in to the drop. He couldn't just metaphorically throw his hands up and go to bed, because he still had to be a teacher. It was his job to take this pain and funnel it into a learning moment, no matter how many pieces there were to gather. So, to distract himself, he headed the few steps to the kitchen and turned on the kettle. "I'm making you some basic bone broth that you're going to drink, but this wasn't part of the deal," he began, a hard, distant edge to his voice as he gathered a mug and tried to remember where the packets were. He hadn't been using them as much with Toshinori cooking for him. "I agreed to training you with the understanding you would keep up your end of the bargain and take care of your normal studies and yourself. That was to teach you that you can't consume yourself to become a hero. There has to be something left at the end of the day. I don't like to repeat myself, but apparently you didn't listen the first time around." Watching his hands moving as if on their own, Aizawa was getting angry. He was angry at Minetta, angry at Shinzo's rashness, but mostly he was angry at the situation, knowing the unfairness beneath it all that pit the two boys on opposing sides of an alley. He wanted to tell Shinzo the truth, that the real reason Minetta got into the hero course had nothing to do with the quality of a person he was, and there was worrisomely little screening on that aspect of incoming hero students. It was just something so arbitrary, like his quirk or a split-second decision made in front of the right people, or the flawed results of an irrational entry exam. And if there was one pain in being a teacher, it was seeing those kids who would grow up in the privilege of an easy life or an easy quirk, thinking that they're heroes without ever doing any of the hard self-work.
At best, those kids topped the chart, buoyed by the natural showmanship of born selfishness. At worst, those kids became Endeavor, became arrogant abusers, because their title of hero protected them, or anyone else, from realizing they'd done wrong. Hurt people, fucked up and big, horribly unprepared to handle the true diligence and guts and simple emotional endurance that heroism required when disaster struck. And help didn't come in time, and people died. It was exactly how Aizawa wanted to see Toshinori at first. He'd tried his hardest to see him that way. Possibly because All Might set the standard for heroes who couldn't be touched, and so he shadowboxed the very concept of the man from the beginning, stoically and stubbornly aligning himself against a system that forgave everything in the face of fame. He was wrong. That was okay. But Toshinori was an exception in so many ways, and the reverence for hero work brought out the worst in people more often than not. It was Aizawa's sworn fucking mission to stop those arrogant kids on the way in, to either reprogram them or dump them, because the world needed good people in positions of heroism, and those good people in turn deserved to be healthy and provided for, not fodder to be consumed. They weren't bodies any more than Shinzo was a body. It was fucked. It was all fucked, and he could only do so much to unfuck it. And Aizawa's aching body momentarily whited out with the strain of guiding so many lives into a flawed system, his scarred hands stilling on the hot mug and the spoon. Along with anger, the relief that came with expelling an entire class was earth-shaking in its own way. In one packet of files, he had violently cast off the course of their imagined careers, as if to say, "Get on with your damn lives. Try something different. Be a human, not a hero. Work for peace. Don't fight for it. Be safe. Please, for God's sake, be safe." "Is this what it takes to get you to listen?" Aizawa prompted the kid when he realized how far away he'd gone. Posturing. He heard a shuddering intake of breath, muffled by cushions, and possibly a fretful cat. "I'm sorry I got sick," came the patchy whisper, cowed and miserable. There was another long, dragging pause, and Aizawa snorted as he stirred in the last of the powdered nutrient broth. "Is that all you've got?" he muttered, exhausted. It did no good to apologize for your body giving out. It could only do so much. The sentiment was perfunctory and misplaced, just like this exchange. "Aizawa sensei," Shinzo croaked. "Do you hate me?" Aizawa nearly dropped the mug. God damn it. "We're not friends, and I get that," he continued in a murmur, torturously drowsy from fever, or simple reluctance. You're my teacher, and you don't even have to be training me. But the other day, when you said you didn't like me, sometimes it's like you look at me and you hate my guts." Staring down at the cloudy, amber liquid still swirling around the spoon, Aizawa made himself take a deep, deep breath. He couldn't even think of anything to say to that, at first, because there was too much to unpack in response to a simple, real insecurity. It was all too much of a fucking mess, and airing it might even break Shinzo's concept of what adults were. More often than not, just bundles of coping mechanisms left over from shitty childhoods. But then Aizawa padded over and set the steaming mug down on the coffee table and sat against the couch again. Himawari picked across Shinzo and came over to him, as if she knew, slinking over his shoulder and down his chest. The gentle warmth of her against his legs did a little to anchor his suddenly floating body, even as he felt himself dissociating, severe and metallic. He pressed his numb lips together. His heart was already pounding. "It's not that I don't like you," he said when he could speak, hoarse. "It's that we're very similar, and I think you already knew that."
There was a pause, the air thick between them. He was very aware that he wasn't looking at Shinso, and equally aware that he couldn't. Not right now. Not yet.
Is that a bad thing?
Shinso asked at last, voice small.
It's a hard thing.
The reality of what he was admitting, and what that invited, caught Aizawa like a yoke around his neck. Was he actually considering telling this to a child, one of his students, no less? But he was. He had to. Because the stainless steel illusion that other people, grown people, didn't feel like this because they didn't talk about feeling like this was what left him afraid and alone was what nearly forced his hand. He wouldn't leave this child alone, not like he had been. He may lose Shinso to battle. He could lose him to time, and his job was based upon acceptance of those terrible facts. But he would never, ever lose him to silence.
This place nearly killed me. I couldn't deal with the pressure or the feeling that I was constantly falling behind or going to fail my classmates. Not to mention the idea that my classmates wouldn't be there for me if I needed it.
He said quietly, staring at the silky stream of broth rising up into the stale air of his apartment. He really should open a window, but he was already feeling too opened, flayed, raw. He swallowed and continued.
Everyone around me had flashy, easy quirks and hated my guts because of what I could do. I didn't try to make friends. There was no point. I had too much to prove. But I was scared. I had nightmares constantly, but still slept every second I could. I quit eating for days at a time just because I was so desperate for control. I thought about dying a lot.
For a moment, Aizawa's entire world was the feeling of Himawari's warm fur gliding under his fingertips, the trusting weight of her little body in his lap. Because that's all he could hold in his mind with such old, dangerous words on his tongue. Shinso was so much like him, after all. He had carried these words for a while, waiting.
I'm gonna ask you something, Shinso. Have you ever thought about ending your life?
His question was met with silence so deep as to be otherworldly. He looked over for the first time since sitting down, and the boy dropped his gaze the instant he did so, freezing. Shinso's hands retracted, and he shrank into the couch, caught and guilty for it. Aizawa breathed out slowly.
I want you to know that it's normal. Normal enough, anyway. When you're in pain, your mind tries to come up with a way to end the pain. And when the pain is big enough, relentless enough, sometimes that's where it goes. If living hurts, how would it feel to not be living anymore? It's simple problem solving and an extrapolation of options, autonomy, and it doesn't mean you're bad or crazy, okay?
The pro hero took a minute to regroup, tallying his body and all the sharp little things going haywire at the mere mention of this, especially the horrible reality of how it was resonating in the boy next to him. He pushed forward, because there was one more thing to make sure of.
What I need to know is if you've ever had a plan.
Meeting his gaze again, Shinso shook his head.
The wash of relief was sharp enough that Aizawa closed his eyes, and he let go of the breath he'd been holding since he hauled Shinso up off the alleyway floor. Since he agreed to all of this. No, since he saw the boy in the sports festival, limping from the ring with that hollow, resigned look in his eye, that look that said he knew he was bad and deserved to be alone, deserved to fail, deserved to hurt. He remembered the feeling so well. And it was the red string stretched taut between them that had terrified him from the beginning. Because Aizawa knew how it felt wrapped around his neck a lifetime ago.
Did you have one? Shinzo's voice was a whisper, but the simple, awful question cut through any semblance of control Aizawa retained, as he knew it eventually would. He knew it was coming, and yet he locked his jaw and took a deep breath. Did he ever have a plan? Yeah, once. Aizawa swallowed, and his throat caught, drifting away from his purring kitten, his hands twisted repetitively in his hero uniform, feeling along the rough fabric like a physical mantra. Now, not then. Here, not there. Safe, not afraid. Still, the irrational, crippling fear needled him, paralyzed him. Would talking about it resurrect it back into his life? Would he survive it again if he did? But I guess I made some friends, somehow, and they talked me out of it. Not directly. They didn't know. But if I could do it again, I'd tell them what I was thinking, what I was afraid of, and how much it hurt. Give them the option of helping me instead of hiding how lonely I was. He shook his head, dimly aware of his hair tangled over his shoulders and into his eyes. He hid in his hair so often as a kid. Maybe nothing had changed, but then he knew that wasn't true. Assuming nobody would help if I asked, it wasn't true, and that's what almost got me killed. Aizawa breathed in sharply as his arms locked around his neck again, clumsy and sudden enough to spook Himawari out of his lap with a shrill protest. Lavender hair blotted out his vision, and Shinzo's hot, unsteady breath peppered his cheek. Aizawa instantly reached up to stabilize and half-hold the boy's long body as Shinzo hung off the couch to cling to him, trembling viciously. "I'm sorry," Shinzo choked out, quietly enough to break him. It wasn't the tender, reaching anguish of sympathy, but a terrible, pure empathy, an understanding so deep as to be mournful, and Aizawa grit his teeth to know it. God, but why? He heard the boy breathe in as if to say something else, and Aizawa tensed so hard it hurt, completely fucking unprepared. But after an instant, Shinzo just hugged him tighter with a thick, miserable sniffle, and Aizawa's hand closed over his shoulder, squeezing him, bracing him, and himself, for what had to come next. "Listen to me. This is important," he grit out past the lump in his throat, voice close to cracking. He gently forced the kid back onto the couch so he could look him in the face. Shinzo's eyes were red and blurry with tears, but he was clenching his teeth and returning his gaze with a kind of terrifying, raw devotion, like he needed to hear something, anything, and he needed to hear it from him. Aizawa felt the old, ravenous need for safety, deep as a well. He nodded like he was letting him know, "I see you. I see you're listening and trying," and put a hand to the young man's head, cupping his temple. Shinzo's eyes flinched shut, and he sniffed. "I need you to know that it's okay to not want this. It's okay if you want to stop training, and I wouldn't think less of you, because this shit is hard, and it's not worth it for everyone. It doesn't mean you're weak, Shinzo. Just living, just figuring out how to be happy, it's enough. If it isn't, what the hell do we have heroes for?" How was peaceful life shameful when it was the only thing worth destroying themselves to protect? Some part of Aizawa even craved it, still felt a bitter stab of jealousy to see people walking and talking in the sunlight and not flinching at every shadow, sleep splintered by remembered sprays of blood. He wanted a little bit of that for his kids, even as it felt impossible. But they were special, he knew, different. Maybe they could do it. It was all he could hope for. "Hey, look at me." He tapped Shinzo's nose and waited until he blinked and met his eyes, hazy. "Whatever you decide, I'm behind it. I'm with you. But I'm giving you permission to quit.
I know you're a good kid and you're trying as hard as you can, but you have to make sure that determination is coming from the right place. Because you're good. Better than most. I see that in you. And you have nothing to prove to anyone, Shinzo. Absolutely nothing. And if anyone says otherwise, I will destroy them, he wanted to say, momentarily insane with how much this child should be protected, cherished for his heart and wit and spunk and simple, pugnacious trying, when all the world had given him was suspicion and fear. Instead, he lowered his voice as he felt Shinzo start to twitch and shake against his palm, a grimace curling his split lip. You have friends in Gen Studies, Aizawa said, like that was all that mattered. At that age, maybe it should have been, and the burdens of their chosen path momentarily chilled the hero. Tender, he scuffed the boy's wet cheek with his knuckles. They'd miss you if you transferred. Like sheer refusal was electrocuting his body, Shinzo shook his head savagely. I want to be a hero, he grit out, his voice spiked upward into a sob as he hectically grabbed for him again, fingers wrenching into his jumpsuit, crying into his neck. I want to be a hero just like you, Aizawa-sensei. They were so fucking young, he had to remember, as Shinzo cried against him, sucking in breath after breath until he nearly shook himself apart with violent coughs and sobs. 14. Why in the world were they so young and facing down such strife? Overcome, it was all Aizawa could do to hold him hard and hold that space for him so he could fall apart. Every rough, helpless breath ripped through his decades-old walls like an earthquake and stripped him. It brought back his own pain, but most importantly, what he had needed to hear in that painful place. I'm with you. I've got you, he heard himself say into his damp hair, almost angry. He realized his fingers were clenching into the kid's shirt, but he wasn't in his body anymore, so he just squeezed, and Shinzo squeezed back twice as hard around his throat, making him cough. Past the alarming pressure of the chokehold, the feeling was a little like wonder. The kid was getting stronger. How much stronger would he be with support and someone willing to fight for him, understand him? He could only imagine. Aizawa just knew he wanted to see it. There will be a place for you in my class next year, I promise, he choked out, too close to a snarl. I fucking promise if I have to bolt another chair to the floor, okay?
Okay.
You'll go see Recovery Girl tomorrow morning, first thing, Aizawa continued, sniffing thickly. No more training until you're back on your feet. I'll talk to your instructors and see what I can do about your assignments until then.
Okay,
Shinzo whispered again, and Aizawa stayed there, interlocked, until he felt the kid's fingers loosen on his shirt. To let him know, take what you need, you won't exhaust my resources, and I'll be here for you. It's my job to be. It's why I've made it this far, to help you, to fix what I couldn't on my own. Aizawa felt, he hoped he felt, Shinzo not against him. And a few quiet moments later, it was clear the kid had reached his limit and checked out. The arms around his neck went slack, and Shinzo's fitful breathing stuttered and slowed to the occasional hiccup. Ears ringing, Aizawa waited until he was sure it was over, before he turned and firmly gathered the quasi-conscious boy and set him back on the couch, only realizing how terribly his heart was pounding when he got to his feet, and his head swam sickeningly. Stripped, he was alone in the wreckage but for Himawari winding anxiously around his bare feet, and Shinzo out like a light and standing out like a raised scar on the formerly safe landscape of his home. Aizawa drew away out of abrupt necessity, the reality of the situation crashing in and shaking him.
Before he could think too much, he switched tracks and subsumed himself in cleaning up. It had been a busy week, and there were clothes everywhere. He kept a dutiful eye on the clock and let the kid sleep for maybe half an hour before nudging him awake and watching him drink the reheated broth with his arms crossed. Within seconds, Himawari was already trying to peek into his cup. Her curious antics produced a weak, reedy chuckle, and Aizawa saw his opening. "You should get going soon," he said as neutrally as he could. When Shinso glanced up at him, where he sat on the coffee table, Aizawa palmed his hair back from his face with a guttural sigh. "Your parents will be wondering where you are, and I can't let this be our introduction, understand?" Shinso tilted his head and just drank deeply from the mug for a moment, hiding in one task to dodge the other. "Brat." Aizawa pretended not to notice the way he was holding the blanket close to his chest over his torn shirt.
"My parents don't get home until maybe 8. He said hoarsely, slowly.
"Tonight?"
Aizawa clarified, frowning. "Every night," he murmured into his cup.
He scrubbed his fingers experimentally over Himawari's nose, who trilled.
"They work a lot."
Aizawa saw the gap. His parents worked a lot, probably to provide their son with the best education they could. It was a double-edged blade. To seek such specialized help and then contort your life to pay for it, maybe depriving that same child of the basic presence needed to develop healthily and feel supported. Not like a floating diagnosis, that is. "Fine," Aizawa said after a long moment. Terse. And with that little word, Shinso drained his mug and fell sideways on the couch and was asleep again within seconds, snoring. Aizawa worked and graded and did laundry in tense silence, trying to stay out of the way. Himawari stayed by Shinzo's side religiously and guarded him. Occasionally, she opened one blue eye as he approached and gave him a look that seemed to indicate exactly how safe she thought the child should be, and how he better not fuck it up. He rolled his eyes every time and went back to work. Preferably in the only other room in his apartment that didn't have an unconscious kid in it. Around 7, he nudged the kid awake again and made it clear he had to get going. It was nerve-wracking having him in his home, and Aizawa's limits had been reached. He would ford an icy river for the brat, but damn it if his common sense wasn't screaming at him that he had to get Shinso out of there to keep his job. Shinso slowly complied in bits and pieces, rising from the couch and then staggering towards the door.
"Bye, Himawari-chan,"
Shinso murmured groggily as he gathered his shoes, wiping his nose and giving her one last fumbling scratch. No thanks came his way, and Aizawa preferred it that way. Less pressure. "Hydrate," he wanted to say as Shinso stood and reached for the door, his mouth thinning into a frown. "Check back in with me as soon as you wake up. We have a lot to do, if you really mean it." "You need to get a proper chest binder. One that won't tear your fucking chest up. And all training is on hold until you do. You punched and threatened your schoolmate with your quirk, and we're going to have a talk about that. If you get me sick, I'm going to kick your ass, and we're also going to have a talk with Yagi-san about what he says to you, because don't think I don't recognize the kind of things you were saying when you were out of your mind back there. Be careful. Get well," he wanted to say, chest aching with the difficulty of it. He wanted to say all of it, but he'd already said too much, so Aizawa let him go and let the door shut. The simple click of metal as the latch caught was like explicit permission to collapse. Aizawa breathed out in a rush, falling back on his couch with a guttural noise. Everything pressed in, everything he had been holding at bay to keep his arms free for the kid. And suddenly the couch was too high, too exposed. He slid down to the floor again and found himself curled up, his hands digging into his knees. His breath came quickly enough to make his head swim again, but somehow sounded muffled in his hot ears. The ground seemed to open up beneath him, and he hissed, clenching his dry eyes shut and leaning into the stinging sensation. Suddenly, he was gasping. Skin hot with panic, Aizawa grabbed and clattered for his phone on the table and pulled up his contact list as the familiar, airless terror circled tighter and tighter, horribly conscious of his thumb shaking above the screen. A second more and he pressed, asked. She picked up on the second ring. There was a clatter, probably her earrings or her studded choker, and she took a breath, close. Hey, honey, how's kicks? Enjoying your evening off? Noise behind her, maybe a party. She was always at parties. Couldn't understand it. Shouldn't be bothering her. Hey, Aizawa swallowed, and his throat clenched dangerously tight. Senpai. There was a pause and another clatter, the hurried click of heels. The human rabble abruptly faded away into the distance. Sho, are you all right? Soft, deep, familiar. His throat twinged again. Aizawa's fingers yanked into the fabric of his jumpsuit and pulled, trying and failing to dissipate the instant, sour tightening of his skin, the terrifying feeling that if he spoke the truth, what was really going on inside him, that he would never stop puking out pain and his body would never be safe again. Himawari nosed at his hand, but he couldn't really feel it. The old tapes played. You're stupid. Don't bother her. Just hang up. What's wrong with you? Why the hell would you ask for help for something so small? Nothing even happened. You stopped the kid before he could really hurt anyone. You did your job. He grit his teeth as hot blood rushed into his neck, prickling. Why are you so fucked up that you even need help? Stop being pathetic. You're overreacting. You always overreact. Sho, talk to me. Now. It was a command in his ear, stapling him into binaries and out of the whirl of panic. He nodded, yanking his jumpsuit and breathing sharply in through his teeth. Yeah. It was all he could say. Dumb and low. Fuck. He dug his fingernails hard into the thin skin of his neck and immediately shoved the offending hand and habit underneath his leg, his heart pounding savagely. His chin fell to his chest, and another surge of cold recrimination hit him and bent him in half. How are you so fucking pathetic? After all these years, how are you still so scared? Good. Listen to me. I need you to focus on my voice. Her voice. If he closed his eyes, he could focus. He made a sound to prove he was there when he wasn't really all that certain he was. Are you in a safe place? Yeah, he admitted, trembling, focused on her questions, not on his own, which would never have answers. Yeah, at the house. At the house on the floor. Stay on the floor, where you are. Don't move. The clack of heels again, toward him. I'll be right there. You're safe, Sho. I mean it. Trust me. He trusted her. Unable to bring himself to hang up or move, lest he sever the crackling line between them and plunge himself into gray space, Aizawa listened to the line go dead and carefully, very carefully, put his phone on the floor. Distantly aware of Himawari's small body bundled next to his leg, he curled up and clenched a hand into his hair and pulled until his eyes watered. Coughs shook him as his body clamped down and seized up, rejecting the terror racking the back of his throat. The self-hatred rotting him through, the needling thought that maybe he just should this time. Hot tears slipped down his nose, and he swallowed his sobs with dry, racking sounds, waiting for help to come. Help came. And it was French lavender and strong arms and cool skin and I've got you, Sho. And he let go, given permission to crumple and fail and be afraid. Then he wasn't, because he had help.